good evening, Truth Seekers. Welcome to this part of Tuesday night. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, did you? I bet I know something about Rick Perry that you don't. Maybe you do. Remember how George W. Bush was a cheerleader at, where was it, Yale? Was he a Yale cheerleader? Rick Perry was a cheerleader at Texas A&M, only he wasn't called a cheerleader. Texas A&M is a more manly school than Yale. At Texas A&M, they're called Yell leaders. Rick Perry was a Yell leader at Texas A&M. This guy is really, this is going to be fun to watch. He's going to explode into just a mass of political nonsense, probably within 6 months. He's already, the only time this boy opens his mouth is to change feet. And boy, has he been doing it today, right, the past couple of days. Oh, my God. We'll get to Rick, Good Hair Perry, soon enough tonight. Trust me on that. This hour is sponsored by Anonymous. Anonymous has a message. Honoring the precious work of healinghollers.com. Alice is a rare soul on this pale blue dot. A sister. Well, now that's mysterious. Thank you, Anonymous, for the sponsorship. I'm sure Alice at healinghollers.com appreciates it. Healin' Hollers has a banner ad at mikemalloy.com. Anonymous. Thank you, Anonymous. From Steve in Laverne, California. I'm going to have to clean this up a little bit, Steve, because I still do have a couple over-the-air broadcast outlets. Steve writes, Mike, so Michelle Bachman thinks this is Elvis Presley's birthday and not the anniversary of his death. An old George Carlin routine came to mind today. To paraphrase what he said about another idiot, Dan Quayle, Carlin said, quote, some people are effing stupid, and some people are full of blank. Still others are not effing stupid or full of blank. They're just effing nuts. Well, Michelle Bachman is all three. She's effing stupid, full of blank, and she's effing nuts. We're in great shape, aren't we? We have a president with no spine, an array of GOP candidates. That should be some community theater production of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Take care. Steve in Laverne, California. Feels very, I don't know, fifth grade saying full of blank. But, you know, what can you do? Stephen Burbank writes, Rick Perry loves America the way a circling vulture loves a soon-to-be-dead cow. Whew. Yeah, Perry is, the only good Perry, the good thing Perry has done is he's knocked Michelle Bachman completely off of, I mean, you talk about having her thunder stolen. I mean, she has to stand up in front of, where was she today? Vermont? No, where was she? And did she lead people in singing? No, she didn't lead people in singing happy birthday, but she wished Elvis a happy birthday, said he's still with us and how much she loved him. You know, Elvis Presley was among other things, a drug addict, even worse than Rush Limbaugh, to the point where he killed himself from being drug overdosed, to the point where he couldn't defecate. And Elvis couldn't, kind of like Limbaugh. Limbaugh has his talk program now, so he gets it all out that way. But Elvis was sitting on the commode when he died because he was straining. What do they call it? Straining at stool. Okay. And it blew his blood vessel in his head. No, you don't need to hear it. But Michelle Bachman is celebrating this day as his birthday rather than his death day. This is the day he killed himself from too many drugs and not enough Metamucil. Sorry, Kathy. This is Modern Talk Radio. Yeah! Oh, Yeah, all the drugs he took just stopped his colon from functioning. Gosh, I have all kinds of good stuff like this for you. Rick Perry. Does he remind you? I mean, we've seen this movie before. We've heard these lines before. Even, what's his name? Turd Blossom. What's his name? Yeah, Karl Rove had to come out today and rip old Rick Perry a new body orifice. He'll never die like Presley did, that's for sure. But he had to do it because Perry is out there accusing the Fed chairman of being guilty of treason. Oh, this is going to be a great campaign. I've never seen a collection of crazy people like this ever, anywhere. Not even the slate of candidates the Communist Party used to run in their elections in the old Soviet Union. I mean, they weren't as loony as this group. This is astonishing. Oh, and also Rick Perry thinks Texas climate scientists are in what he calls a secular carbon cult. The secular carbon. Oh, think Progress Green. Brad Johnson, writing there, says Perry has watched firsthand the ravages of a warming climate, first as his state's agriculture commissioner. He had killer droughts and record heat in 96 and 98. Then as governor, droughts in Texas in 2002, 2003, 2005, 2006, 2008, 2009, 2010, and 2011, with Texas' hottest July in history just passed. Perry declared the 1996 drought, quote, the worst natural disaster in Texas in the 20th century, end quote. And this year, he issued an official proclamation to pray for rain. Pray for rain! You psychotic son of a bitch! Why don't you lead an effort to do something scientific to try to just a little bit to try to get the earth back heading towards some kind of balance that makes sense. No, you're going to pray? You're going to pray for rain. Okay, yeah, that'll work, won't it? Perry argues that climate science is, quote, all one contrived phony myth that has fallen apart under its own weight, end quote. That's in his book, Fed Up. This is a quote from the book. For example, they have seen the headlines in the past year about Dr. Data related to global warming. Of course, that never happened. They know we have been experiencing a cooling trend, that the complexities of the global atmosphere have often eluded the most sophisticated scientists, and that draconian policies with dire economic effects based on so-called science may not stand the test of time. Quite frankly, when science gets hijacked by the political left, we should all be concerned. And it's all one contrived phony mess that's falling apart under its own weight. Al Gore is a prophet, all right, a false prophet of a secular carbon cult. And now even moderate Democrats aren't buying it. Yee-haw! Oh, my God. Yeah, Rick, why don't you and Michelle get together and get Sarah Palin, Michelle Bachman, get Sarah Palin and some of you other religious psychopaths and just get in a big circle and start praying and swaying and sticking your arms up to heaven. And whew. There are dozens of credible atmospheric scientists in Texas and at institutions in that benighted state like Rice, University of Texas, Texas A&M. And according to a professor of atmospheric science at Texas A&M University, none of these people agree with Governor Perry's views on the science of climate change. The scientist writes, this is a particularly unfortunate situation given the hellish drought that Texas is now experiencing and which climate change is almost certainly making worse. More when we come back.
Like an angel, talk like Redefining Anger Management, back to Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So, Rick Goodhair Perry's own alma mater, Texas A&M, the Department of Atmospheric Sciences there, the entire faculty agreed that it is virtually certain that the climate is warming. A statement from them: it is very likely that humans are responsible for most of the recent warming, and future climate change from human-made greenhouse emissions brings a risk of serious adverse impacts on our environmental, on our environment and society. Now, I've got here, Brad Johnson put this together, a partial list of the Texas climate scientists who disagree with Perry's denial of climate science. You know, Perry says it's a secular carbon cult and it's nonsense. But including this list of individuals I'm going to give you here, the Texas State Climatologists and the directors of the Environmental Science Institute agree. The Texas Center for Climate Studies, the Center for the Study of Environment and Society, the Climate Science Center, the Cooperative Institute for Applied Meteorological Studies, the Institute for Geophysics, and the Center for Atmospheric Chemistry and the Environment. Now, these are people who disagree with Perry. Jay Banner, professor, Jackson School of Geosciences and director of the Environmental Science Institute, University of Texas at Austin. Donald Blankenship, senior research scientist, Jackson School of Geosciences, University of Texas at Austin. Kenneth Bowman, Atmospheric Sciences Department Head, Texas A&M. Sarah Brooks, Associate Professor of Atmospheric Sciences, Texas A&M. Jenny Catania, Assistant Professor, Earth Surface and Hydrologic Processes, University of Texas at Austin. Ping Chang, Professor of Atmospheric Sciences and Oceanography, Texas A&M University. And he's also the director of the Texas Center for Climate Studies. Don Collins, professor and director of environmental programs and geosciences, Texas A&M. Don Connolly, instructional associate professor of atmospheric sciences, Texas A&M. Kerry Cook, professor, climate systems science, University of Texas at Austin. Andrew Dressler, professor of atmospheric sciences, Texas A&M. Robert Dickinson, professor of geological sciences, University of Texas at Austin. Andre Droxler, professor of earth science and director of the Center for the Study of Environment and Society, Rice University. Robert Deuce, distinguished professor emeritus, Department of Oceanography and Atmospheric Sciences, Texas A&M. Craig Epifanio, associate professor of atmospheric sciences, Texas A&M. Rong Fu, professor, Jackson School of Geosciences, University of Texas at Austin. Charles Jackson, research scientist, Institute for Geophysics, University of Texas at Austin. Rob Corti, assistant professor of atmospheric sciences, Texas A&M. Catherine Hayhoe, associate professor and director of the Climate Science Center, the University of Texas at Austin. Mark Lemon, professor of planetary sciences, Texas A&M. Shaima Nasiri, assistant professor of atmospheric sciences, Texas A&M. John Nielsen Gammon, professor, Texas A&M University and Texas State climatologist. Gerald North, distinguished professor of atmospheric sciences and oceanography, Texas A&M. Richard Orville, professor and director, Cooperative Institute for Applied Meteorological Studies, Texas A&M. R. Lee Panetta, professor of atmospheric sciences and mathematics, Texas A&M. Judd Parton, postdoctoral fellow, Institute for Geophysics, University of Texas at Austin. Terry Quinn, research professor and director, Institute for Geophysics, University of Texas at Austin. R. Saravanan, professor, Texas A&M. Gunnar Shade, assistant professor, Texas A&M. Courtney Schumacher, associate professor, Texas A&M. Russ Schumacher, assistant professor, Texas A&M. Istvan Sinoya, assistant associate professor, Texas A&M. Fred Taylor, senior research scientist, Institute for Geophysics, University of Texas at Austin. Michael Tobis, research scientist associate, Institute for Geophysics, University of Texas at Austin. Ned Veazey, research science associate, Institute for Geophysics, University of Texas at Austin. Thomas Wilhite, Research Professor, Texas A&M. Ping Yang, Professor and Holder of the David Bullock Harris Chair in Geosciences, Texas A&M. And Renny Zhang, Professor, Director of the Center for Atmospheric Chemistry and the Environment and Holder of the Harold J. Haynes Chair in Geosciences, Texas A&M University. Those are members of what Rick Perry calls a secular carbon cult. Now I ask you, who are you going to believe? All those pointy head, stupid ass professors and scientists? Or the God infused Rick Perry, who says, let us pray. We're going to pray away this drought. Ain't no global warming. Who are you going to believe, truth seeker?
I can go on since she left me here alone. My one desire is to try not to cry. She might come back one day, bye bye. My head is spinning, I'm going around and around. My head is spinning, I'm going around and around. Witchcrafts are going to keep going down and down. Well, my head is spinning, I'm going around and around. My head is spinning, I'm going around and around. Witchcrafts are going to keep going.
Get your news unfiltered with Mike Malloy.
I can't cool down. Got me spinning round and round. Round and round and round it goes.
25 before the hour. And Anonymous is sponsoring this hour. The message honoring the precious work of HelanHollers.com. Alice, who owns that, is a rare soul on this pale blue dot, a sister. Very interesting sponsorship here tonight in this hour. Well, thanks, Anonymous. You're right about Alice at HelanHollers.com. By the way, if you have not used that insect repellent that she makes, whoa, that stuff works. And I've got, I don't know, I give off enough carbon dioxide or whatever it is, I can be in the middle of a football stadium. If there's one mosquito there, it's going to find me. But this insect repellent that Alice sells over at Heal and Hollers, holy Toledo.
Well, carbon dioxide is a harmless gas.
All right, Michelle, later. Later, later, later.
Too bad it doesn't repel Republicans.
Ronald Peterson, I'll give his whole name, Ronald Peterson, owner and president of Clover Township Industries, wrote me an email. He's in Sacramento. He writes, Mike, if you've been following Obama's current bus tour, he's going to be in Alpha, Illinois on Wednesday. That is going to be the most excitement in that small village, population 500, since 1964, when then-Vice President Nixon came through on a whistle-stop train trip. Nixon went from Peoria to the Quad Cities, while Obama will be traveling in the opposite direction. They say that Obama will be talking about jobs. Too little too late, if you ask me. Where was he back in 2009 when the Seaford Clothing Company in Rock Island, Illinois, closed its doors and 300 workers lost their good-paying union jobs? This company closed its doors when Wells Fargo refused to extend its line of credit. The local congressman even contacted the White House for help. Nothing from Obama. Maybe Obama will stop at John Deere in Moline, Illinois, and ask them not to proceed with their plans to start making their green and yellow tractors in China. I doubt it. The Quad Cities has never recovered from the loss of jobs when International Harvester and Chase closed their factories. What I think his trip is for is to be in the area where his favorite president, the person who he inspires to be like is from. Yes, Obama is back where Ronald Reagan came from. Obama is spending the night in Davenport, Iowa. This is where Reagan got his start in radio at WOC on Brady Street. Obama is going to be speaking in Atkinson, Illinois, which, by the way, is very, very close to Reagan's hometown of Tampico, Illinois. When Obama has finished talking about bringing jobs back to the rural areas of western Illinois, he will be driving back to Peoria and the comfort of Air Force One. He will be passing through Galesburg, Illinois, which also has a Reagan connection. The city fathers have created a Reagan history walking and driving trail. The city lost a lot of good-paying union jobs when Maytag left town for Mexico. I can only guess that this Reagan trail is to bring in tourist money. See the houses where Reagan slept. See the trees that Reagan pissed on, etc., etc. Jobs in western Illinois. Good idea, Mr. Obama. I wish him luck, for I, too, have been trying to bring jobs back there, Galesburg to be exact, but I've not been able to yet. But I will not give up. Your faithful listener in Sacramento, Ronald Peterson, owner and president of Clover Township Industries. Yeah, this tour... If, you know, seriously, I don't want to align myself with this Republican scum in any manner. But if President Obama is really serious about jobs, standing and giving a campaign speech in a village of 500 people is ludicrous. Mr. President, why don't you go back to Washington, D.C. and do what Chris Matthews suggested and I seconded, or I don't know, somehow the two ideas got meshed up, of coming up with a jobs list of infrastructure repair that will result in millions of people going back to work, and break it down per congressional district, all 435 congressional districts in the United States. Post it on the internet, talk about it every time a camera's near you, and dare the Republicans not to fund it. Make the Republican members of Congress explain why they are against 8,000 jobs or 12,000 jobs or 60,000 jobs back in their home district. But no, Mr. Obama, apparently your advisors are telling you to go to towns with population of 500 and put up a bunch of those hay bales and roll up your sleeves, take off your tie, your coat, and talk about the terrible shape the country's in. That's not leadership, Mr. Obama. No, it isn't. From Prairie 2, helping the economy is treason if your goal is to destroy it. Shh, you weren't supposed to say it out loud. In a bid to become president of the asylum, once the inmates take over, candidate Rick Perry answered a question from the audience in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, Monday night about Federal Reserve policy. He suggested that if the Fed chairman prints any more money before the election, that would amount to treason. Perry said, quote, "If this guy prints more money between now and the election, I don't know what y'all would do to him in Iowa, but we would treat him pretty ugly down in Texas. Printing more money to play politics at this particular time in American history is almost treacherous, or I mean treasonous, in my opinion," end quote. The Bush crime family, who originally appointed the current Fed chairman, reacted harshly to Perry's comments, with Karl Rove going on at length about it to any reporter that would listen. Maybe Perry isn't up on current events and thinks Alan Greenspan is still chairman. You could almost make a case against him. But Ben Bernanke has played his role pretty straight. The current Fed chairman favors big money interests in all ways, but hasn't tried to destroy the economy the way Greenspan did. Today, Perry refused to take back the remark, but a spokesman put it off to the governor's being, quote, "passionate and energized by the state fair," end quote. Now, I know the state fair always makes me want to get pretty ugly on Fed chairman. It must be the deep-fried butter on a stick that does it. So far, the Fed has managed to keep us from falling into a deflationary spiral that always accompanies a major depression. Fears of inflation appear to be unfounded as the price spike in commodities is wearing off. Now that the Fed has been successful in accumulating about $1 trillion in treasuries, it can easily calm any excessive inflation. All the Fed has to do is resell as many bonds as needed to soak up any excess money in the system. It's a crude way to run an economy, but it could keep the depression at bay for some time. Apparently, the Republicans really fear that this could work. So that's endorsement enough for me. All that is required is for Obama to keep Congress from doing anything destructive, and there lies the rub. Obama has only been able to do this so far by giving Republicans most of what they want. However, the things Republicans want always favor the rich, and people are starting to notice the pattern. The Oracle of Omaha, Warren Buffett, came out again today with another appeal to tax the rich. Republicans immediately painted him as a socialist or simply uninformed about economics and tax policy. Let's see. We're supposed to elect Romney because he's a businessman, even though his experience is limited to tearing apart companies and selling them to China. Bush and Cheney were both MBAs, and so we're really supposed to know how to govern. Of course, they both had crashed every company that either of them had ever ran and did the same for the economy. We should elect Rick Perry because he's put Texas in the ditch. But we shouldn't listen to the most successful capitalist ever because he thinks people making over $1 million a year should pay more than 15% income tax. I don't know if Rick Perry has a defined policy on taxes. His policy statement says simply he will cut them. But his views almost certainly run along the same lines as the other Republican candidates who want zero corporate taxes and zero capital gains tax, which would mean no taxes at all on guys like Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett says he would like to share the sacrifice and that inequality is getting too extreme between the rich and the rest of the country. This doubtless has him on Rick Perry's traitors list. PrairieNumeral2.com. So Warren Buffett is treason also, right? Oh, my God, can you believe this? And if you watch the video, there's Rick Perry. I mean, I expect him, when he moves, to see a codpiece on him, just like George Bush, when Bush landed on the aircraft carrier. But there he is, walking among those people at the fair, and just reaching out to them old ladies, and grabbing, shaking hands with these middle-aged guys. Yeah, well, what are you going to do when you're elected, Governor? Well, I'm going to go up there and kick some ass. That's what I'm going to do. Really? How many jobs are you going to make for us, Governor? Oh, I'm going to make as many as I can. America, you've heard this before. You saw this movie like 10, 11 years ago. Do you remember what happened? For Christ's sake, do you remember what happened? Oh, you don't? Oh, okay. I'm a dagger in your back, an extra turn on the right. I'm the whimpering of your heart, a standing pain, a sudden star.
It's more Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Anonymous in honor of the precious work of healandhollers.com and the owner and maker of potions there, Alice. Alice is a rare soul, Anonymous writes, on this pale blue dot, a sister. There you go. Thank you, Anonymous. From Reg at TV News Lies, excuse me. .com, or is it .org? Oh, well, you'll find it. Mike, today I walked past a picket line in front of a new Verizon Center, not a store, a center, occupying an entire building on the main shopping street in my Brooklyn neighborhood. The men walking and chanting were largely ignored by most people who passed them by. I suppose largely because most people had no idea who these men were and what they were doing there. I made it my business to wish each man on the line good luck and assured them that I was in their corner. They were so appreciative to get any support and thanked me over and over, saying it, quote, means a lot, end quote, to have people with them. Here's how Verizon is fighting back. This is from the Wall Street Journal. In the latest escalation of an increasingly bitter labor battle, Verizon Communications, Inc. has been telling union members it will suspend basic health insurance and medical benefits on August 31st for all workers still on strike at that time. Verizon issued the threat in letters sent to 45,000 workers who walked off the job to protest proposed cuts to their benefits that the telecommunications company says are necessary to stem a sales decline in its traditional wireline business. A loss of benefits could test the resolve of union workers who have so far been unified despite doing without pay since the strike began August 7th. After the expiration of the most recent three-year contract, Verizon employees represented by the Communications Workers of America and International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers have already seen their pension accounts and some disability coverage suspended during the strike. Chuck Simpson, president of CWA Local 2204 in Santa Virginia, said, quote, we feel the company is exercising any means possible to make our members suffer in hopes of breaking our unity, end quote. The CWA, which represents about 35,000 Verizon workers, has a $400 million fund to distribute to members. Those workers are eligible for $200 a week after 15 days of the strike and $300 a week beyond 30 days. A Verizon spokesman acknowledged sending the letters, saying they were meant to give workers time to seek alternative health care options. Oh, you're so sweet, Verizon. And that the possible loss of those benefits was negotiated in the recently expired contract. Verizon spokesman Rich Young said, this is standard procedure. The CWA is preparing plans to help members with paying for their health care should their benefits lapse, according to information sent to workers on Tuesday. Verizon would be within its legal rights to suspend the benefits, though companies seldom do that during a labor strike, said a Clark University professor of industrial relations. The professor said, quote, it tells the workers that management has the upper hand, but it can have the unintended effect of getting the workers to dig in their heels even further and fight, end quote. In a new contract, Verizon wants to freeze pensions, tie pay increases more closely to job performance. Of course, American workers are already the most productive in the history of the human race, but never mind. Make it easier to fire employees for cause and require workers to contribute $100 or more a month toward health plan premiums. By the way, the company said its first half revenue in wireline, which includes home and business telephones, as well as FIOS cable and internet, declined 1.2% from a year earlier to 20.4 billion. CWA and IBEW officials say Verizon is trying to curb the union's influence, pointing to the company's $3 billion profit in the first half of this year. The contract fight has become mired in a war of words. Verizon has accused union members of sabotage and obtained injunctions against illegal picketing in some mid-Atlantic states. While striking employees have said Verizon replacement workers are at times overly aggressive with picketers. Verizon shares fell 18 cents to $34.80 a share at 4 p.m. today in composite trading on the New York Stock Exchange. Well, that's how you do it, huh? Back in the day, they called that strike breaking, strike busting, head busting. We have Verizon, don't we? We do. Just a cell phone? Oh, that's it? None of this in here is Verizon. It's worse? No, it's AT&T. Well, we have a
Warren Buffett doesn't have a phone company.
Too bad. Well, there are phone companies, though, that are not like Verizon. We have a contract with Verizon, right? We're stuck, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Just thought I'd check. Mike from Connecticut writes, Mike, Rick Perry doesn't scare me. He's obviously a fraud and a corrupt moron. What scares me is the stupid, low-information people who will probably vote for him. After last week's recall count in Wisconsin, I no longer have any faith in my fellow citizens. Mike from Connecticut. I hear that. It's hard to keep faith of any kind, right? All right, we'll be back after the break. You gonna stick around? Oh, okay. Program tonight. The number here is 877-996-2556. If you'd like to check in, we'd like to hear from you. We don't talk about the murder and mayhem going on in Iraq anymore, do we? Huh? Nobody pays attention to that except the newspapers. I don't think you ever even see it on television anymore. Yesterday in Iraq, a series of fatal attacks. After hundreds of billions of dollars spent since we invaded and occupied that country in 2003, hundreds of thousands of lives lost for what? The most potent threat to Iraqis and the American troops still in the country are the insurgents. 42 apparently coordinated attacks yesterday. 42. The number of American troops killed this year has jumped. The attacks yesterday were against civilians and security forces across the country, made it the deadliest day of the year for Iraqis. It came in the form of suicide attacks, car bombs, homemade bombs, and gunmen. By sundown, when Iraqis broke their fast in observance of the holy month of Ramadan, the death toll had reached 89, including three suicide bombers. 315 people were wounded. Iraqi forces clearly unable to preserve anything remotely resembling peace. Uh, No group claimed responsibility for the attacks yesterday, but in a voice recording posted on a website for Al-Qaeda in Mesopotamia, that's the name of their group, last week a spokesman for the terrorist group said that it was preparing a wide-scale strike, obviously referencing what happened yesterday. A spokesman at the website, identified as Abu Muhammad Al-Adnani, said, quote, "I promise you that we're on the right path. Thanks be to God that we're doing very well here." We have men who have divorced themselves from life and love death more than you love life, and killing is one of their wishes, end quote. Isn't religion wonderful? Isn't it just, I mean, suicide bombers who then get to go be with Allah in heaven? The attacks began around 3:30 a.m. on Monday in the city of Ramadi, when two improvised bombs exploded near a police patrol, killing three officers and wounding two others. A half hour later, in the city of Baquba, gunmen attacked a checkpoint, killing one police officer. At 5:45 a.m., two suicide bombers attacked an Iraqi counterterrorism unit in the city of Tikrit, killing three officers. 15 minutes later, gunmen with silencer weapons attacked a group of Iraqi army officers in Baquba, killing five. At 7:45 a.m., the day's most lethal attack occurred when two car bombs exploded in a market in the southern city of Kut, killing 35 people and wounding 71 others. An hour and a half after that attack, two suicide car bombers struck a police checkpoint in the city of Taji, just north of Baghdad, killing one person and wounding nine. Saad Ahmed, a policeman who was wounded in Taji, said he opened fire on a suicide bomber who was driving toward him. The car struck Mr. Ahmed and knocked him to the ground. He said he stood up and fired again. Seconds later, the attacker detonated the car bomb. From a hospital in Baghdad, he said, "I looked at my body and I was drowning in blood." He added, "It is Ramadan this month, and we should pray that we won't kill each other. What crime did we commit? We were just trying to protect our country." Around 8 p.m., gunmen dressed in military uniforms stormed into a mosque in the city of Yusufiya, just south of Baghdad. The gunmen read off the names of seven people who had been loyal to the United States and had joined the Awakening Movement. They took them outside the mosque and executed them. George W. Bush should hang for these murders. George W. Bush should hang for the mass killing, and so should every member of his administration. Should be like the German high command. They should be put on trial, charged with what the Nuremberg Commission said was the worst crime that one country could commit against another, an unprovoked invasion. The worst crime. The worst crime. The worst war crime. And why I made a comment about the SEAL Team 6 dropping lines over Prairie Chapel and dropping in on Bush and Cheney and the rest of these filthy pigs, if they really wanted to get somebody responsible for death. The Bush crime family was responsible for probably 100 times as much death as the 19 bombers who attacked this country. And when I suggest that, of course, immediately all these pig right-wing websites filled with these booger eaters just exploded, right? Just exploded. Emails from people saying, "I'm a SEAL, I'm going to come here and kill you." Bring it on, ass. Oops. Am I allowed to say that word? No, the second part of that. So two still, oh, I'm not? Why? Oh, well. So, yeah, Bush and Cheney and anyone who facilitated in the Bush administration should be brought to trial, found guilty, and hanged. Seriously, hanged. Hanged by the neck until dead. Hanged because of what they did. After a fair and honest trial, of course, by an international tribunal where these kinds of mass killers, if they're caught, are sent. And now the moneyed interests in this country are determined to get Rick Perry elected. Don't kid yourself. All this talk about, no, the moneyed people want Mitt Romney. No, they don't. They want Rick Perry. They want Rick Perry because they know that's the way to keep these satanic religious cult freaks quiet. And Rick Perry can be forced to do anything. They have enough on him to blackmail him for the rest of his life. Did you know that he was a major investor in a porn film company? I might talk about that tomorrow. I'm not going to get into it tonight. Yeah, Rick Perry. Oh, my God. All right, we have a break coming here. We'll be taking some phone calls momentarily. If you got something to say, now's the time to get online. 877-996-2556. If you want to join in. All right. We will be right back.
When you're strange, faces come out of the rain. When you're strange, no one remembers your name. When you're strange, when you're strange.
Listening to the Mike Malloy Show. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
21 past the hour. Richard is in Providence, Rhode Island, listening on XM. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Mike. Rick Perry certainly seems presidential to me. A Yale leader and a pornographer is perfect.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely perfect.
What the hell is a Yale leader? I've never heard of that until this moment.
Well, they don't want him to seem like a fairy.
I see.
You know, he's a male cheerleader, you know. Otherwise, he'd have his ass pinched and it would be wrong.
That's very true.
I want to essentially explode something called what they're calling the sanctity of debt.
Sanctity of debt.
The sanctity of debt rolls off the tongue, okay?
Yeah, it does.
So here's the deal. We live under a sea of air on a small planet in the middle of nowhere, rotating in a gravitational field and traveling at millions of miles per hour. We're not even sure whether we have 13 dimensions or 11. And we're ruled by a world that was set up under kings and queens who really thought the earth was below, the sky was above, and God was with the queen. All the institutions of money and property are bogus. They're all bogus. But there is no debt. If there's a debt that's owed, it's by the rich to the poor.
So what do we do about this?
That's a real good question. I'm really, really not sure. But it is true that if we basically agreed to pay the Chinese, who basically gave us a lot of goods, or the people that gave us oil, or, you know, sold us oil, and we owe them, that's good. But the people that gave us only debt, you know, the Federal Reserve, for instance, has been milking the country for the last 100 years. So basically, you throw back the statute of frauds back about 100 years, and clearly they're at the heart of it. They contract the money supply or expand the money supply, and they basically control us like sheep, you know, with money.
Uh-huh.
And they're attempting to take all the money. There are trillions of dollars missing, you know, like Austin Fitz. I don't remember her first name. Says, look, there's trillions missing. You know, Rumsfeld lost $1 trillion right out of the Defense Department. Couldn't find it.
Couldn't find it, yeah.
Couldn't find it. Well, trillion gone. It's the old rat hole.
It's amazing.
So what I'm thinking is they're trying to control the world by controlling all the money.
And they're doing a good job of it so far, too.
Well, the other part is people in the middle class, you know, most of us have got $1 million IRAs. You know, I mean, we've got some serious money invested. You go, well, it'll be okay. I mean, I can't get much money. I'm invested in the market, blah, blah, blah. They could crash the market and wipe out those IRAs and turn the middle class into paupers. The people that are pretty smart,
mm-hmm.
with a few bucks, you could turn them into paupers, too. And that would basically shut them up. The people that are pretty smart, have a little money, don't want to make any noise because they don't want to, you know, don't want to make any waves.
Right.
So we're kind of screwed, but I always believe in good over evil. Okay?
Well, I know
how they set it up. And I don't know how to change it, but it will happen.
Well, I'd like to believe that there was such a thing as good over evil in the first place. I don't believe in good and evil as being distinct. How to say this? I don't want to say entity, but like energy flow. Everything is just a flow. Everything is just it's just energy flowing. This makes no sense. I sound like I'm stoned here. I know, but look at my finger, man. You know, and my finger. I think people can do hurtful and harmful things to one another. There are a couple of stories in the paper here in the past few days. Richard, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. A couple of stories of some very horrific, violent, unthinkable crimes by adults against children. One guy decapitated his own mentally challenged son, cut off the hands and the feet, and then set the head out on the curb so that the ex-wife would see it when she came over. I mean, some really horrific events, but I still can't get myself to believe in evil. And I know somebody immediately says, what about Hitler? What about the Holocaust? What about Stalin and the starvation of 30 million Russians? What about Dick Cheney and George W. Bush invading a country for no reason other than they could? I don't see that as evil. Like there is some force field that could be so identified. I see this as sociopathic individuals, people who are clinically insane, and in an environment where the species was really intent on preserving itself, those people would be immediately taken to some pit and thrown in and set on fire. Anything to get those people out of the gene pool. But a holdover, I guess, from all this religious garbage is to, certainly Christianity, some forms of it, is to expect or offer up redemption. You know, as I say about redemption, the same thing that I say about, oh, never mind. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Dialogue so sad.
liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malone.
Oh, yeah. 25 before the hour. Back to your phone call. Sam is in Toledo, Ohio. Hello, Sam.
Hello?
Yeah, hi, Sam. Hello,
Thank
Sam.
Yes, hello. Can
there,
you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. Uh-huh.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
We only discovered your show about 2 months ago. We've been listening to some of the other shows, some of the progressive shows, and just to give you a little background, my wife and I have always voted Democratic, and my mom and dad were both Democrats, lifelong Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Up until recently, I had a good job with the city of Toledo, and my wife had a good job as a medical technician. We both lost our jobs. We lost our house recently as well, and we're kind of camping out in a trailer at this point. And there's just a lot of frustration out here, and I don't hear anybody talking about it except on your show. And one of the things that's really frustrating is that we hear our friends and we hear people talking about reelecting Obama. And I know there's a lot of crazies out there on the right, you know, Rick Perry and Bachman and people like that. But I can't imagine why anybody would want to vote for Obama again after what he's done. I mean, there's such a sense of betrayal that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem to me to make any sense to vote for somebody who has betrayed us in this way. There has to be an alternative. There has to be somebody else out there, a Dennis Kucinich or a Howard Dean or somebody, a Russ Feingold. But I can't vote Democrat again. I can't vote for this guy again. I can't do it.
Well, you know, I share that sentiment. I agree with what you're saying. I grew up in Toledo, Ohio, and when I lived there all those years ago, it was a good place to grow up in. It was a working class city. It was a feeder city for Detroit. Everybody had a job. Everybody was union. If you didn't have a job, it was simply because you didn't feel like working. And I watched my hometown. I left in a long time ago. I left probably in 65. But I watched my hometown turn into a Rust Belt city. And I had relatives there until they all died. And so I know that in Toledo, a union town, or it used to be anyway, a working class town, it's rough to be in the situation you're in. As far as Obama's concerned, today, he made a pitch to public worker unions that he thought it was okay if those workers who were members of so-called public unions sat down and realized that times are tough and they might have to give a few things in order to, have the right number of school teachers regarding how many students in a classroom. And I thought to myself, when's the last time, Mr. Obama, that you addressed the bankers and hedge fund operators?
Could I say something else?
Oh, sure. Go ahead.
Okay. While I was waiting, you were talking about Iraq, and I don't think we should forget that George Bush isn't in the White House anymore, that this is Obama's war now, and that these people are dying because of Obama. You know, there's still hundreds of thousands of people, Americans, American troops and the mercenaries are still over there. I've got a brother-in-law who's over there right now.
Right.
And
well, I was referring specifically to the invasion of Iraq and the destruction of the country, which was Bush's. Obama has inherited two wars and an economic mess, and he's done nothing to get us out of the two wars, nor has he done anything to turn the economic mess around. But I do believe in putting responsibility where it belongs. George W. Bush and Dick Cheney decided to steal Iraq's oil and invaded the country.
Well, I just would like to make the point that there has to be some alternative to Obama. I mean, there are a lot of people out there like us who feel so betrayed, and we cannot vote for this guy again. We just won't do it. And it doesn't matter how crazy they are out on the right. I mean, why should we reward these people again? People like Obama and Harry Reid and Pelosi, why should we reward them for stabbing us in the back like this?
Well, that's very true. You're living in a trailer. What part of Toledo are you living in?
We're hanging out in basically in a parking lot in Perrysburg, which is
I'm familiar. South of... Right, I'm familiar with Perrysburg. Yeah. Well, Sam, I don't know what to say. I really don't. I hope things can improve for you. I'm not good with advice. I'm not good with problem solving. That's not what this program's about. This program is more about the reason you called. Things are just unraveling for you. And nobody seems to be taking a leadership position to stop the unraveling. And I certainly understand that. As far as the Democrats are concerned, though, let's try not to forget that the financial problems that we are in right now were engineered, designed, and specifically and deliberately caused by Republican policies. This was the whole objective of the Bush-Cheney crime organization, was to so totally bankrupt and destabilize this country. Don't forget that whether you liked Clinton or not, and I didn't, when he left office, he handed George W. Bush 2 or 3 years of budget surpluses and projected out as far as the eye could see, and to the point where if they just would have left everything alone at this point, we would not have a national debt. We wouldn't be $13 trillion in debt. So while I share your disappointment and sense of betrayal about Obama, let's also keep in mind that the Republicans are the ones who engineered all of this, every single bit of it. Now, Obama could have taken much stronger measures. He did nothing because Obama is essentially not a leader. But I get a little bit leery when people want to dump all of this in Obama's lap. He has done nothing to solve it, which is what a president is supposed to do, which is what he promised to do. But it was not of his doing the reason we're here. So I just like to keep that straight. Sam, stay in touch. I hope things somehow work out. I know that sounds crappy, but I don't know what else to say. Thanks, Sam. Mateus is in Minneapolis. Is it Mateus?
Yeah, Mateus, Mike. Yeah, and I just called. I listened to your show. I've been listening for a long time.
Uh-huh.
I'm a big fan of yours. It's amazing how good you are. You just stay as it is. I love it. Okay.
Well, thanks.
And tonight, I decided to just make a phone call for the first time to your show to say you touched one very important subject for me, which is this invasion, not war, invasion of a sovereign nation, Iraq, by the Bush administration.
Right.
Okay? Just the call you had right now telling you that we should forget about Bush and talk about Obama. No. If we don't try to correct or punish those in the past, we're never going to get it right in the present. In the future. So Bush, Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, those guys should go to jail, should go to trial at least.
Yeah.
Now I ask the whole world, I travel abroad, Mike, why the world is not talking about it? First of all, I want to remind my fellow Americans, okay? They invaded Iraq. It was planned in the New American Century over 1970s. They had this planned. Mm-hmm. They couldn't do it before. They did that now. And they tried to put in American mind was 9/11, that Saddam Hussein was involved in 9/11. I was following every single channel, TV, radio. I know they're pushing for that. Didn't agree with Americans. Then they changed to weapons of mass destruction. And then, you know, the big lie came to about. People know that was not true.
Mm-hmm.
Even some people still believe that. And then they went on to say that just to liberate Iraq. So basically, Saddam Hussein involved in 9/11, and then didn't go by. Next one was about weapons of mass destruction, which is not true. And then they said liberate. I mean, they killed thousands and thousands of men and children, women, and men. That makes me mad.
Yeah, well, that's why I get very suspicious of and find myself a people who call in and try to lay this on Obama. Obama didn't, decide, because he could, to invade another country and kill tens of thousands of people. That was George W. Bush. I think Obama has an obligation to get us out, and he has not fulfilled that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this.
Mike, the whole. I have been in this country for 20 years, Mike, but I travel abroad a lot.
Hey, hold on a second, Mateus. Hold on a second. I have to take a break here, and I'll come back and we'll pick it up for another couple of minutes. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Gentle into that good night. Rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Yeah, indeed. 10 before the hour. All right, Mateus, let's wrap it up here.
Hey, hi, Mike. Yeah.
All right, go ahead. I'll give you another minute.
Yeah, no problem. I was just talking the subject of this country's economy, the situation, and how I see the U.S. become a third world nation, developing country, and separating rich and poor. The gap is increasing by the day.
Yep.
And as you pass other color, this nation, he lost his job and so on. And he tried to blame on Obama right now. No, this whole thing has been happening for the last 30, 40 years.
That's right.
And by Republicans strictly. And they blame on Democrats. They make a mess. They pass it on. They lose election to Democrats. Democrats then are blamed on because they play the game. So this is not what it is. But the way President Obama has changed is almost as if he saw danger, his life in danger, the way he changed so much.
Mateus, let me just add this, and then I got to move on. A lot of people will disagree with that Obama really didn't have the experience in leadership or an economics program or a jobs program or a foreign policy program. And as a result, we haven't been tricked by Obama at all. That Obama is what Obama really is. What we did, people like you, possibly me, certainly, was try to identify him as a progressive or a liberal for a number of reasons, not the least of which was what he said during the campaign. And then he got elected, and it turns out what he said during the campaign was a bunch of smoke and mirrors, which makes him not too much different from most politicians who are filled with ambition. And remember Mark Antony, who said, if Caesar were ambitious, it were a grievous fault, and grievously hath Caesar paid for it. God, it was hard to get that out. But so I think Obama was interested in his history and his ambition, but I don't think he really had a plan. I think it was people like us who were fooled by what we thought we saw, and we really didn't say it. Really didn't see it. Mateus, thanks, man. I got to move on. I appreciate you checking in. Philip, where's Philip? Philip's in San Diego. Hey, Philip.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I particularly enjoyed today on the blog the picture of Rick Perry having a corn dog. Clearly, he is talented at several things.
Yeah, he is. And Michelle Bachmann. Why do candidates do something as ridiculous as put one of those corn dogs in their mouths? They know it's going to be photographed. They know it's going to wind up in, oh, I don't know, Malloy's website. And it just makes them look like damn fools, doesn't it?
Yeah, maybe he's auditioning job in case this presidential thing doesn't work out with the porn company.
Well, he was an investor in a porn company back in the 90s. He surely was. But anyway, that's not what you called about. What'd you call about?
Well, what I want to call about is the tail end of the program last night when you were talking about the progressive caucus here in California being pretty much shut down because they put out a resolution challenging Obama.
Yeah.
And I was talking to some people on the Democrat website today on Facebook and stuff, and I was letting Republicans have it, and I was letting Democrats have it too. They're apologizing for this. And I think the thing that pisses me off the most about it is the fact that, you know, in 2004, you know, when there was more progressive talk radio, you were on the air, Bob Kincaid was on the air. I even had stuff to do here in San Diego when we actually had a progressive talk station.
Yeah.
We all kept saying, you know, the Republicans are just staying in lockstep with Bush. And now I feel like I'm being told I got to stay in lockstep with the Democrat Party and vote for Obama no matter what. And I know we're not going to have a primary candidate, you know, like Kucinich or anything like that. They just won't let that happen. One of the responses I got today was, well, maybe they just don't want to embarrass the president, but how has the president embarrassed so many people that went out and campaigned for him and trusted him, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I hear you, Philip, loud and clear. I'm not sure what to do. I'm hoping that there will be a candidate. Somebody has got to challenge this man from the left, somebody who is experienced, possibly somebody who is a governor, maybe someone who is a governor and a doctor, maybe, you know, so he can fix the sixth, what am I talking, Howard Dean? Wouldn't that be interesting? Bernie Sanders, I don't know if he would consider himself too old for a presidential run. Probably so. Howard Dean certainly is not too old. Russ Feingold's name was mentioned. There are several, progressives who I think, could present a case as to the insanity of putting another Republican in the White House, including Barack Obama, or the insanity of allowing the Republican Party and most of the Democratic Party to continue to dominate the legislative process. I would hope that the election of someone like Howard Dean would energize the progressive base in this country, those of us who are still holding on to the last tiny shreds of hope that we could get enough people elected to the House and the Senate to turn this country. And if that were to happen, of course, it would take a considerable amount of time. We're talking maybe 10 or 15 years. And I don't know how, I don't know if we have that much time left. I really don't. There are a lot of people who are just at their wits' end and don't know what to do, where to go, what, then nothing. I mean, you know, to ask somebody to wait is impossible sometimes. Look at how the civil rights movement, so many members of the white power structure kept telling leaders of the black liberation movement, if you know, just calm down, boys. If you can just wait a little bit, things are going to change. Just wait. Don't worry. And you know, the black liberation movement said, are you out of your goddamn mind? We're tired of waiting. I don't know if we've gotten to that point yet, but all right, we'll be right back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. stick around to the third hour. It's a tough decision some nights. You know, it really is. Like, do we go through another hour of this? Oh, my God. All right, as promised, the another example here for my liberal or progressive colleagues on radio and television. Another example of the non-progressive, non-liberal, non-democratic attitudes and actions of Barack Obama. And this stuff, you know, that I've been sharing with you is all substantive. This is not just my opinion. You know what my opinion is. I've made that very clear. But opinions are like your nether parts. Everyone has one, right? But then you have the actions taken by someone who so many otherwise intelligent people want to insist is a liberal or a progressive or even a Democrat. And the latest action by the Obama administration, I mentioned this last week, is the approval of Shell Oil's plan to begin drilling for oil in the Beaufort Sea off the Arctic Ocean coast of Alaska. Let that sink in for a second. Drilling for oil. Jesus, God. Now, according to reports, the first offshore drilling operation authorized in the Arctic region since that catastrophe last April, or April a year ago, in the Gulf of Mexico. And as Brian Dine at WSWS.org reports, quote, "It's only the latest example of the Obama administration's prostration before major oil interests," end quote. Yeah. Yeah. Give you an example, truth seekers, of when Obama has not, that's all I'm asking for, has not folded, acquiesced, given in to those interests in this country that nobody except an idiot would consider to be progressive or liberal having the best interest of the American public at heart. Come on, one example. You know, it's the same thing I asked these dumbass Republicans. Give me one example of anything George Bush did in 8 years that was to the benefit of the working class and the middle class. And, of course, nobody has ever responded to that because they can't. And now I would turn it around and ask liberals or Democrats or progressives, whatever you consider yourself to be, give me one example of any action Barack Obama has taken that has truly benefited the middle class, the working class, in his 2.5 years. Just one. Without all sorts of caveats attached to it. Like, you know, some people say, well, Mike, he got the Affordable Health Care Act through. And in the Affordable Health Care Act, people can't be denied the insurance coverage because of pre-existing conditions. Well, in the first place, in the federal judge battle of left and right over the Affordable Health Care Act, some judges have said yes to this, some have said no, and it's going to wind up in the Supreme Court. And furthermore, declaring that to be a victory, that he got that for the American public, when in fact he promised to get at least a public option and should have gone after single payer or Medicare for all, just magnifies the his cowardice, his duplicity, his lies, and his inability to lead, especially where it concerns his so-called base, what used to be his base. Any Democrat who considers himself a liberal or a progressive, who now considers himself the base group of support for Barack Obama, any individual in that group is a damn fool. But I digress. Approval for drilling in the Arctic, in the Beaufort Sea, came from the government, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, Regulation, and Enforcement. How's that? Huh? You didn't even know that existed, did you? Neither did I. The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. Ocean energy. Gosh, that sounds so, oh, I don't know, environmental, doesn't it? The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, Regulation, and Enforcement, or BOMRE. BOMRE. Uh, They gave approval. The government gave approval through this agency, Bomri. Now, Bomri adopted the plan given to it by Shell Oil without even a cursory examination. You see, isn't this how it works? Shell Oil presented the feasibility study and said, okay, this is what's going to happen. These are the risks. These are the risk assessments. These are blah, 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 right down the list. You know, your standard feasibility study, right down the list. And so the government, the Obama administration, just said, oh, okay, thanks. That was it. The Bomri adopted an attitude of no criticism toward the company, entrusting it, Shell Oil, to not violate safety regulations. Oh, okay. Like Cargill is entrusted not to put rancid, poison, goddamn filth-infested meat out there in the grocery store. That's working out pretty good, isn't it? Or Monsanto is trusted not to provide genetically altered food that nobody knows how badly it's going to affect not just the food stock in this country, but your bowels, your digestive system. Oh, that's working out pretty good, too, huh? Yeah. So Bomri, the government, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, regulation, and enforcement. Those last three words are just a joke. Ocean energy management, regulation, and enforcement. Oh, okay. Anyway, this agency is also ignoring the ecological impact of the Exxon Valdez spill all those years ago. What was that? 22, 23 years ago? That's back when we were all young. Do you know that those cases still haven't been settled? Exxon Mobil has still not satisfied any of the demands that were first ordered. They keep waiting and waiting. People die. This is the thing about corporations that Mitt Romney says are people. They never die. They're immortal. And their damage goes on and on and on forever. World without end. Amen. But I digress. When the oil tanker Exxon Valdez struck the Bly Reef, it spilled all that oil into Prince William Sound. And according to stats, I mean, who's counting? The result of this was 250,000 dead seabirds, hundreds of dead sea otters, hundreds of dead harbor seals, bald eagles. Oh, yeah, four humans were poisoned during the cleanup, too. The immediate economic impact of the Exxon Valdez all those years ago was the loss of 26,000 jobs and $2.4 billion back when a billion meant something. You know, there was a time when $1 billion was like breathtaking. You know, a billion? Ah! What is it now? Nothing. Doesn't mean anything. The amount of oil left in the ocean in the as a result of the Exxon Valdez spill is still unknown. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. An entire way of life in Prince William Sound was ended. Just ended. And Exxon Mobil, did they ever pay for anything? Did they ever pay for anything, right? Oh, of course not. Oh, there was a couple little pissy payments to this person and that person and this little fishing boat and that little fishing boat. But Exxon has bigger fish to fry, so to speak, or bigger fish to suffocate, so they move on. And in this case, it's Shell Oil. It's their turn. We had Exxon. We had the BP murder spree, and now it's Shell's turn. Yeah.
Had something up her sleeve. Well, she danced around the barroom and she did the hoochie coo. Yeah, she sang her song all night long. Tell me what to do. Blow up your TV.
Now when I'm lonely, I'm want you all.
The Obama administration has approved Shell Oil's plan to start punching holes in the bottom of the ocean in the Beaufort Sea off the Arctic Ocean coast of Alaska. No questions, no restrictions, just we trust you, boys. Go ahead, Shell. Exxon in 1989 showed how that works, how that system of we trust you, boys, works. BP, April a year ago, also showed how that system works. And when the explosion occurred at BP's Deepwater Horizon a year ago, April, which killed 11 workers, BP and the Obama administration co-conspired to get out of this as easily and as quickly and as with as little corporate pain as possible. Earth Economics values the damage done by BP in the Gulf of Mexico at approximately $1 trillion to the Mississippi River Delta alone. A 1,000 miles of coastline. Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, Florida. Damage. Now, I'm sure you've seen the commercials from Panama City and various coastal beach towns along Florida Panhandle, Alabama, Mississippi. Hey, come on, everything's cool, man. Look here. Look at the sand, how white it is. Dig down about 4 inches and see if it remains white. Anyway, the cleanup efforts by BP were a joke. Instead of forcing BP to pay the full amount in cleaning up the contaminated areas, the liberal, progressive, democratic Obama administration allowed the company to set up a $20 billion fund to compensate residents who were out of a livelihood because of the destruction. And to date, less than a quarter of the fund has been paid out. And BP, it wasn't recently, BP said, that's enough! These claims coming in here are phony. Really? Are they phony? Anyway, the Obama administration's approval now of Shell Oil going into the Beaufort Sea, or Beaufort Sea, however you want to pronounce that, off the coast of Alaska, is, hello, setting the stage for a similar disaster. The government-approved plan assumes that Shell has the capacity to clean up 95% of all oil spilled with only mechanical devices like booms and skimmers. The evidence, of course, says otherwise. Booms and skimmers only cleaned up 8% of the Exxon Valdez spill and only 5% of the BP oil spill. And booms and skimmers, I have come to understand, are designed for the relatively warm conditions not found in the Beaufort Sea or the Beaufort Sea or in the relatively warm conditions of, say, August, not the icy weather of October. That's when Shell Oil plans to begin drilling in October. You know it's going to happen. You know what's going to happen, don't you? Now, what would the environmental impact of a spill be in that region? Can you say altogether now, catastrophic? Can you say that? That's a big word. Catastrophic. That has meaning. That's not when one of the women on The Bachelorette or Bachelor gets handed the rose and told to leave. Catastrophic is something really, really bad. It's not when Michelle Bachmann wins this half-ass straw poll in Iowa. That's comedy. But a catastrophe is what's going to happen in the Arctic Ocean off the coast of Alaska. That's a catastrophe. Anybody want to guess how many species calls the Arctic Ocean home? Beluga whales, polar cod, Arctic char. These are fish. Well, the whales aren't. Narwhal. Those are those long pointed seal looking creatures that have the long pointed horn on the end of them, huh? Seals, polar bears, walruses. Some of those are endangered species already threatened with extinction because of global warming. But the Obama administration says, there's only going to be a limited impact of drilling on the environment. The liberal, democratic, progressive president of the United States is saying that. More when we come back.
The Holocaust was an elaborate hoax. I'm just to the left of the Christian right. I've got a large cross. Do you have a light? We're all compassionate. Serve as my friend. The last thing I want to do is tax and spend. Guns are great. They make us all safe. Except, of course, for the high death rate. Abortion's wrong, capital punishment's right. Killing poor bad people is something I like.
How awesome is it?
And now, a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, the liberal, democratic, progressive president of the United States, Barack Obama, has approved with no deep questioning Shell Oil's plan to begin drilling for oil in the Beaufort Sea off the Arctic Ocean coast of Alaska. It starts this October. A catastrophe, if ever there was one, in the making. Just waiting to happen. This president, who should be devoting energy to other forms of energy, once again bows down before the oil company interests, the Koch brothers, the mafia that exists in Texas, where Rick Perry is now decided that Jesus or God or some spook has talked to him and said, "You gotta be president!" It all comes from the same source, doesn't it, huh? The Obama administration's claim that there would only be limited impact of drilling on the environment. Some people call it disingenuous. I call a lie. They're going to go into this fragile environment and start drilling for oil. And not only that, it's my understanding because the Beaufort or the Beaufort Sea is so shallow, there's going to be a lot of slant drilling. You know, you go down 1,000 feet, and then go parallel to the surface of the bottom of the ocean. Maybe another 5,000-6,000 feet away from where your wellhead sits. That'll be great fun when that explodes, right? A U.S. Geological Survey report issued in June assessed the impact of the development of oil and gas industry in that region. The results pointed to a collective ignorance
in the understanding of the Arctic Ocean ecosystem and the necessity to research the area further before disrupting everything with drill platforms. They don't care. Why should Shell Oil give a goddamn about an ecosystem? The very nature of their business is destroying the atmosphere. So why care about some little crappy-ass body of cold water? And why should the Obama administration care? This means nothing. Nothing to the religious crazies, nothing to the political crazies, and absolutely nothing to the Obama administration. Where's the resistance? Where's the demand for further study, if nothing else? Where is it? I like this. In addition, it is known that Shell's plan to drill will disrupt the migration path of the bowhead whales, an endangered species. Ooh, now there's a reason not to drill, huh? The migration path of a bunch of goddamn fish? No, they're not fish. They're fish! Okay. Okay. The drilling will also disrupt and impede the movement to resting in feeding areas where these whales have to go, these huge mammals have to go. And what's that going to harm? That's going to harm mothers and calves and consequently the entire bowhead whale population. But who cares, right? They're just big goddamn fish. Who cares? Who cares? What is very important to the Obama administration and to the capitalist murderers who run Shell Oil is the oil. Whales, birds, people, ecosystems? What? Are you kidding me? Earth Justice Attorney Holly Harris, quote, "This is a disaster waiting to happen. But still, BOMRI, the government agency, is moving forward with Arctic Ocean drilling. Scientific integrity, she adds, and government accountability took their familiar back seat to oil company profits and power today." End quote. Never stops, does it? The Bureau of Ocean Energy Management Regulation and Enforcement's approval of the Beaufort Sea drilling also ignores the difficulty, extreme difficulty, of responding to any crisis in the region. The Beaufort or Beaufort Sea is part of the Arctic Ocean directly north of Alaska, where it's difficult to get large operations going the majority of the year, and more so during the fall and winter months, which is exactly when Shell wants to start drilling. Coast Guard Commandant Robert Papp admitted to Congress that the federal government has, quote, zero capability to respond to a spill in the Arctic. Did you get that? The Coast Guard Commandant Robert Papp told Congress that the federal government has zero, not 10%, zero capacity to respond to a spill in the Arctic. So it'll be up to Shell Oil. It'll be up to Shell Oil to handle any catastrophe that develops. Well, so in this decision, can somebody, Real quick, send me an email and show me where this decision by the Obama administration is one that is scientifically sound, environmentally sound, makes sense from a standpoint of getting the country off of these poisonous fuels, coal, oil, gas, that are destroying everything. Somebody?
Anybody? Just one little arrow pointing from the Obama administration to progressive politics, progressive ideas, liberalism. Just one? No? Okay. Just thought I'd ask. The oil companies for over 130 years, 140 years, when did we switch from whale oil to petroleum? When was the big shift? About 150 years ago, 140 years ago? The oil companies since that period of time have chosen freely, consciously, without restriction, with no checks and balances, to utterly and absolutely destroy the earth. You doubt that? That's a pretty sweeping statement there, Malloy. But I get an email from somebody this morning that said because I didn't agree with him, I'm starting to show signs of dementia. I did. Someone who's been a regular correspondent. But apparently I pissed him off because he's talking about the problems on Earth are caused by banking. And I said, no, the problems on Earth are caused by capitalism. So immediately I'm suffering from the early stages of, I don't know if he said Alzheimer. I think he did say dementia. Huh? No, not Prairie 2. Oh, my God. Prairie 2 and I are blood brothers. Now, this is somebody who's been writing to me for years, but all of a sudden I'm suffering the early stages of dementia because I don't see that it's banking that screwed everything up. And my point was that banking is an aspect of capitalism. And his point was, I have dementia. Okay. Well, is there anybody who can show one of those little arrows? You know, you see them on graphs, on feasibility studies, on business reports, little arrows, pointing up, pointing down, pointing towards profit, pointing towards loss, little arrows. Can anyone show me an arrow that points from the Obama administration in the general direction of progressivism or liberalism? Well, if you can, you know, my email address, just shoot it off to me, okay? So, in the meantime, I'll be curious to see to what extent my liberal colleagues in radio and television blame Shell when the eruption occurs in the Arctic Ocean. They'll blame Shell. And it has to be a spectacular eruption because there will be no talk, I doubt, from my liberal or progressive colleagues in radio and television about the disruption of the natural order of things in that area. It'll have to be something really spectacular, right? I mean, millions of gallons of oil spewing into the... And then they will blame Shell, but not the sainted Barack Obama. Oh, no, 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 no. It all just seems to change. Hanging on is easy when you've got a friend to call, when nothing's making sense at all.
It's Mike Malloy.
Money's good, work's okay. It's like everything is rolling our way. Till you got a little devil in the eye. You know that bastard's one big lie.
10 before the hour. I wonder why. I wonder why people who truly should know better, people who work in media and people who one assumes have to do at least a bit of research when they get on the air for an hour on television or 2 or 3 hours on the radio. You have to do some sort of research. I know I have listeners who swear that I just, you know, pulled the stuff out of one of my body orifices, but that really doesn't happen. And I think about all the folks that I know, all not that many of them, who even on websites, whose job it is or should be, because they profess their liberalism or their progressivism, their job should be to expose whoever it is who is using the shield of liberalism or progressivism to deflect legitimate criticism where it concerns their running, whatever it is they're running. In this case, I'm talking, of course, about Barack Obama and running the executive branch of government. Obama, to my knowledge, to this point in his presidency, has done nothing, absolutely nothing, that could be considered pro, let's reach way back, pro-FDR or pro-LBJ. Some of those programs, hell, even some of the stuff that Nixon did. Barack Obama has done nothing. He postures. He's a great speaker. But no question about that. He, as they say, talks the talk, but God forbid he should ever walk the walk. Now, we can use euphemisms like disingenuous or fudges the truth or whatever. Fact is, he's a liar. It's just as bad as George Bush was a liar. Just as bad as Bill Clinton was a liar. Is that a prerequisite to being president of the United States? You've got to be a smooth, slick liar? Is that, apparently it is. And I get emails from folks who, maybe a year ago, when this criticism, I mean the heavy-duty criticism that I've been leveling against the Obama administration started to come out in the programs, I get emails from people who were shocked, I tell you, that I had the audacity to criticize a man who was doing everything he could to be a good Democrat. Well, slowly but surely, those emails, the tones of those emails from those writers is changing. And people are starting to realize what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with two parties, one of which is totally corporate controlled and dominated and owned outright. That would be the Democratic Party. And the other one, that is owned by a combination of religious insane people, totally insane people, and the worst aspects, if it can be subdivided, of capitalism. So those are the two choices for right now. Those are the two choices. When the Progressive Caucus in the California Democratic Party said, look, we have to mount a challenge to Obama from the real left, from the liberal left, from the Democratic left. What was the response? Threats from the California Democratic Party to decertify the liberal caucus, the progressive caucus, I believe it's called, of the Democratic Party. and to the familiar whining and complaints I hear from people that say, well, Mike, what do you want us to do? If we don't vote for Obama to be reelected, then the Republicans are going to win, and there goes the Supreme Court. And my answer to that is, and continues to be, are you kidding me? Do you really think the United States Supreme Court can become any more fascist right than it is now? This is a Supreme Court that ended representative democracy with two decisions. The one in December of 2000 that handed the presidency to a man who was not elected. And a decision a couple of years ago, the Citizens United decision, that said, as Mitt Romney insisted, corporations are people. Corporations are people. So how do you... I mean, how do you do that, Ms. Liberal or Mr. Progressive, so-called? How do you do that? How do you tell yourself that the re-election of Barack Obama is necessary in order to stave off a right-wing assault on the Supreme Court? How do you do that when the Supreme Court already, I mean, for the past decade, has demonstrated over and over again
Class action lawsuits by an aggrieved party, the aggrieved party being female employees of Walmart, in the gutter. Tell me a decision, truth seeker, in the past decade. I'll make it easy. In the past decade, a decision that has benefited, there must have been one or two, the working class, the middle class, us, you know, you and me. So the charade continues until it's no longer possible, I guess, to play the game that the Democratic Party is, as it's presently constituted and led, is the party of working class Americans, middle class Americans. You're not serious. Well, yes, you are. And that the reelection of Barack Obama is necessary in order to stave off the conversion of the Supreme Court into nothing but a right-wing rubber stamp machine for fascist America. You're kidding about that one too, right? No, I guess you're not. Listen, you have a great evening. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.